Tall, Dark, and Cowboy by Joanne Kennedy. Narrated by Karen O'Bryant. Copyright 2011 by Joanne Kennedy. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Casablanca, an imprint of Sourcebooks Incorporated, and was produced in the year 2012 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. To my sister, Carolyn Smith, who taught me how to read, how to write, and how to live a life filled with books and art and beauty. Thanks, Keisha. Chapter 1. The higher you fly, the harder you fall, and the harder reality smacks you in the butt when you land. Lacey Bradford learned that lesson for the first time in high school, when the cheer team fumbled the catch after flinging her in the air. Hair flying, pom-poms aflutter, she'd struck the grassy sidelines with a bone-rattling thump. This time her fall was figurative, but it hurt just as much. Standing on the cracked macadam of a gas station in Nebraska, fishing in her purse for the last remnants of her gas money, it was hard to believe she'd gone from trophy wife to transient in one short month.
"Hey, that your dog?"
She turned to see a teenager lounging beside the mini-mart's smudged glass door with a cigarette dangling from one hand. His hair was overlong and greasy, his jeans streaked with what appeared to be automotive grease and cheese-doodle dust.
"Better take it if it is."
He flicked his butt into a puddle on the asphalt that was so glossy with oil, Lacey half expected it to burst into flames.
"Boss said I should get rid of it."
He nodded toward a dog standing next to the dumpster. It looked like a rat, or maybe a badger. Did they have those in Wyoming? They had all kinds of weird animals. Lacey had seen a pronghorn antelope a few miles back, that looked like a cross between a deer and a prehistoric donkey. "What do you mean, get rid of it?" The boy shrugged and looked away as the dog collapsed and rested its whiskered chin in the dirt, sighing as if resigned to its fate. Its body was small, not much bigger than a cat's, and its head was far too big for its body. A massively plumed tail flailed above its scrawny hind end.
Hell, if she looked like that, she'd crawl behind the dumpster and die.
Wait a minute. She did look kind of like that. Her formerly silky hair was frizzed by the heat and humidity, and her once creamy complexion was spattered with freckles. But she was proud of the way she looked. She was a real person now, not somebody's china doll. She'd earned her freckles, and she'd wear them with pride.
"Can't you just call the shelter?" she asked.
The kid looked at her blankly. "You know, animal control."
"Yeah, right."
He jutted his thumb toward the west. "Closest town's Grady, and they ain't even got people control." He kicked the butt out of the puddle and ground it under his heel, eyeing the dog speculatively.
"I'll just, you know, get rid of it."
He bent his knees and pointed at her. For a second she thought he was going to do some weird John Travolta disco move, but then he swiveled toward the dog, sighted down his finger, and twitched his thumb.
"Bang," he said.
Dang. She was headed to Grady, but it was almost an hour away. If the animal rode in the car for that long, it would probably infest the upholstery with mites or fleas or something. The kid blew on the tip of his finger and shoved his hand in his pocket. She stared at him a moment, then patted her thigh and started toward her car. "Come on, pup dog. We're going to Grady." A half hour later, she heard a disgruntled rumble from the back seat and checked the rearview mirror. The dog appeared to be sleeping, or maybe he was dead, but judging from the sounds emanating from his belly, his innards were still very much alive. He sounded even worse than the car, which had frequent fits of automotive rheumatism
that made it putt-putt along with all the speed and power of a Toro lawnmower. Taking the old Mustang she'd driven in high school on her road trip had seemed like a good idea. After all, it was her car, her own, not her ex-husband's. But maybe doing a little maintenance on it over the years would have been a better one. A trip down memory lane should have been a smooth ride, but I-80 was an automotive ordeal pitted with potholes and scattered with stones. The dog's stomach rumbled again. Better pull over. Don't want to take any chances. Yeah, right. She steered the car to the shoulder and slid to a stop, kicking up gravel with a barely controlled skid. She was taking one heck of a chance with this whole trip. Her resolution to swear off the ill-gotten gains her husband had reaped from his real estate scams had seemed noble at first. She'd told herself she was turning over a new leaf, turning her back on the past. But the past kept popping up like a persistent whack-a-mole she couldn't hammer down. When she'd hit the job-hunting trail back in Conway, she'd discovered she'd become an overnight pariah. Nobody would hire the ex-wife of the man who'd cheated half the town. Then Wade Simpson had turned up, looking for her husband, making vague threats that made her uncomfortably aware that she was alone and unprotected. Her gut had told her to leave, and for once in her life, she'd listened. As her hometown had fallen behind her, a spirit of adventure had taken over, and she'd felt footloose, free, like a kid running away from home. Running felt as good as it did back when she was a little girl on the playground, playing kick the can or tag. Unfortunately, she was it this time. But she wasn't the can, and she wasn't going to let anyone kick her around. She was just going to keep on running. She let the dog out of the car and watched him lift his leg on a tuft of grass that had somehow managed to push its way through the gravel by the side of the road. He angled his hind leg impossibly high, almost tipping over in his determination to mark his newfound territory. "Don't get too excited," she said. "It's not yours just because you peed on it." His brown eyes regarded her with an accusatory, bitter gaze, as if it was her fault someone had dumped him at a gas station in the middle of nowhere. His sparse, spiky hair and bushy eyebrows gave him the air of an angry and slightly mad senior citizen. She was glad she'd taken him with her. He made her laugh, and laughing made her feel like something inside her had given way and released the real Lacey from the stiff little Stepford wife she'd become. "Come on, Sinclair." Sinclair was the name of the gas station where she'd found him. The symbol for the place was a dinosaur, a friendly green brontosaurus. If it had been a Tyrannosaurus Rex, it would have been infinitely more attractive than the dog, and it would have exuded more warm fuzzies, too. Naming the dog was a mistake. Naming him made him hers. But why shouldn't she have a dog? She didn't have anything else. She gripped the steering wheel and jutted her chin, glancing up in the rearview mirror to see if she'd nailed her "I'll never be hungry again" Scarlett O'Hara impression. With her dark hair and pale skin, her green eyes and sharp, determined little chin, she'd always identified with the feisty heroine of Gone with the Wind, and she'd lived her life by the philosophy of WWSD. What would Scarlett do? Scarlett wouldn't worry. She wouldn't torture herself thinking up worst-case scenarios. She'd say, "Fiddle-dee-dee," and think about it tomorrow. But the freckles weren't helping the impersonation any. Neither was the trembling of her chin. Scarlett had never been this scared. Finally, the cornfields petered out and the town of Grady appeared in the twilight distance, a glittering oasis on the endless plains. Somewhere in that lonely nest of lights was Chase Caldwell, an old friend and admirer, and hopefully her new knight in shining armor. She hated to ask a man for help so soon after she'd set out to be self-reliant, but there was a good chance she wouldn't have to ask Chase for anything. Back in high school, he'd do anything just for a smile and a wink. Hopefully he still would, because a smile and a wink were about all she had to offer. A smile, a wink, and a really ugly dog. She slowed to the posted 30 miles per hour and poked down a shoddy, small-town main street lined with tortured trees and crumbling brick storefronts. It looked like a town from a creepy movie, maybe the one about that serial killer with the weird haircut, or the one where Angelina Jolie's little boy was abducted. But it was exactly what she was looking for, a remote outpost where no one would ever look for her. And actually, the old brick-fronted buildings had promise. The town could be quaint, if some energetic real estate agent marketed it right. She pictured the street lined with gift shops, maybe sporting goods stores, and a good breakfast place. There seemed to be lots of pickups with gun racks on the highway, and every town needed a breakfast mecca. That was the kind of thing that made a hometown into a home, a place people cared about. That's what she'd wanted to do back home. She'd planned to get her license and partner with her ex in his real estate office, but she wasn't about to join him in chopping up the surrounding farmland into cookie-cutter developments. She wanted to match homes with families, find spaces for small businesses that could help the town grow. But somehow, the years had passed, and she'd never gotten past the receptionist's desk where she'd worked since high school. Trent had always agreed she should get her license. He'd always agreed she could do more. But then he needed her in the office. He needed a special dinner made for a client. He needed her home. That's why it had been so hard to walk away from the marriage. He'd ended up being the only person in the world who needed her. The tall brick-fronted buildings dropped off at the end of town, giving way to a more modest structure that crouched below a yellow sign, spinning slowly above a dirt parking lot. Chase Caldwell Used Cars. Guaranteed dependable. Used cars? Lacey slapped on her turn signal and swung into the lot. She hadn't expected Chase to be a used car dealer, and she knew better than to depend on anyone other than herself. But after the last few disastrous days, a guarantee on a car, a man, or life in general sounded like sanctuary. Navigating a motley row of pickups interspersed with rusting farm equipment, she pulled to a stop in front of a lopsided trailer with a battered cardboard "Open" sign baking in the sunlit window. "We're going to stop here and talk to somebody," she told the dog. He lifted his head, and the glow from the revolving sign highlighted the snaggle tooth that jutted from his undershot jaw while he peered down his nose at her like an old man with bifocals. "Don't give me that look. I didn't know he sold used cars." It was true. She'd expected to find Chase Caldwell tilling fields, not hawking cars. Back in high school, her friends had fallen into four classes: jocks, geeks, stoners, and hicks. Chase was the head of the hicks, two-term president of the Future Farmers of America, and a champion breeder of goats, sheep, and every other breed of livestock sanctioned by the 4-H Club. He'd looked like a budding Mr. Green Jeans in his button-down shirts and string ties. She smiled, remembering his unabashed enthusiasm for his chosen career field. He'd been immune to the total lack of cool connected with the farming profession, and when his nanny goat won grand champion at the Tennessee State Fair, he'd distributed wallet-sized photos of the slit-eyed, pink-nosed princess to all his friends in sixth grade. She winced, remembering how mercilessly the kids had teased him about his new girlfriend. She hadn't joined in, but she hadn't done anything to stop it, either. That sin of omission hadn't done a thing to kill his crush on her, though. His devotion had never wavered, surviving from sixth grade all through high school. the kid had been like a golden retriever. Sweet, faithful, and eager to please. Golden retrievers never changed. Hopefully, boys like Chase didn't either. Chapter 2. A woman approached the Mustang, teetering on heels that rivaled Lacey's own for sheer impracticality. They looked reasonably professional, though. Black pumps, simple and classic. The matching suit seemed almost prim, until you noticed how the nipped-in waist emphasized the woman's figure, and the lapels plunged an inch or two too low to expose a shiny bauble hanging from her neck on a thin gold chain. Judging from the way the fabric clung to her tiny hiney, it had to be some kind of cheap polyester blend. "Quit being a snob," Lacey cranked down her window. "Without Trent's money, you can't afford anything better. You've got hand-crank windows, for God's sake." She looked down at her sporty Steve Maddens, scuffed almost beyond recognition. She wasn't sorry to leave her old life behind, but she was going to miss high-end footwear. She already missed automatic windows. The woman smiled with a practiced air Lacey recognized. The same, trying too hard, aren't I pretty smile she'd learned as a cheerleader. She felt an instant stab of sympathy. She knew just what the car lot lady was up against. She probably wanted to use her brains to get ahead, too, but it was her body everybody noticed. Her body and her smile. If a less attractive woman had worn that suit, it would have looked sleek instead of slutty. "Are you here to trade this in?" The woman patted the side of the Mustang. Lacey tightened her lips and shook her head. "Not today." She wished she could trade it in, because the car was clearly going to die on her. It looked like death, with paint chipping from the hood and a jagged crack that had spread from a rock chip on the windshield. But its appearance wouldn't matter if the alternator hadn't failed in Missouri and the starter in Kansas. The Mustang wasn't just a gas guzzler. It was a cash guzzler, too. Thanks to the repair bills and the Tennessee Attorney General who'd frozen her assets, along with her ex-husband's, she barely had enough cash left to pay for a few nights in a motel. She really was depending on Chase Caldwell. "I'm here to see Chase." The woman's friendly veneer cracked for a moment, but she pasted the smile back on and nodded toward the trailer. "He's in there." The woman spun on one heel and sashayed off across the lot with her tightly clad butt twitching, but the grating sound of high heels on the dirt lot halted as Lacey stepped out of the car. Lacey could feel the woman's hostility burning a hole in her back as she mounted the worn wooden steps that led up to the door of the aluminum-clad trailer that served as the car lot's office. But there was no way this woman could have a hold on Chase. She was too flashy. If Chase had a girlfriend, she'd be the farm girl type. And hopefully, she'd be a nice person who wouldn't mind if her guy helped an old friend. Pausing at the top of the steps, Lacey glanced back at the crumbling brick buildings lining the street. Ancient glass shop windows reflected wavering funhouse renditions of their neighbors across the street, so only the signs, jutting out over Grady's pitted sidewalk, offered clues to their contents. "Pookie's Candles and More," read a fading oval. "Dollar Mart," said a cracked white plastic sign in bold red letters. The only places that looked reasonably prosperous were the Quick Lube next door and the cafe across the street. She took one last look at the Mustang to make sure the windows were cracked open so Sinclair wouldn't get heatstroke. Opening the door to the trailer, she dug her best cheerleader smile out from under all the baggage she'd accumulated in 8 years as a trophy wife. She aimed the smile at the man behind the counter and faltered, one foot twisting slightly on its high heel. This couldn't be Chase Caldwell. It must be his partner or something. Chase had big brown eyes and a love-struck, goofy grin. This guy had a simmering, sexy, scorch-your-clothes-off stare that made her feel suddenly naked. She glanced down to make sure she hadn't forgotten to put her pants on that morning. Nope, she was still wearing her white capris, her favorite pair, tight enough to showcase her gym-toned derriere, but still classy. She adjusted the collar of her silk t-shirt, wishing she'd chosen something that showed a little less cleavage. His eyes dipped to the cleavage in question, and the smile widened. Lacey cleared her throat, feeling her lips tremble along with her knees, and glanced down again to make sure her nipples didn't show through the shirt, because her nipples were definitely happy to see this guy, who was definitely not Chase Caldwell, because this was no farmer. This was a cowboy, tan and muscular, with sinewy arms exposed by the carelessly rolled-up sleeves of a snap-button shirt and slim-hipped Wranglers, suggestively worn white at the thighs and fly. Lacey had never felt the effects of airborne testosterone before, but this guy made her wobble like a weeble. His gaze traveled from her cleavage over to one happy nipple, then the other, lingering a moment before it drifted downward on a long, leisurely journey that took in her hips, her thighs, and the tips of her French manicured toes. His gaze would have been insulting if it hadn't been so appreciative, and so very much appreciated on her end, too. Overheated and exhausted from the long road trip, she couldn't help doing a self-congratulatory mental fist pump at the guy's obvious interest. She let him finish the once-over, and met his eyes just in time to see his appreciative assessment harden into shock, then pass through something that looked almost like fear before it froze into a cold, hard glare.
"Lacey Bradford," he said. "Holy."
He pressed his lips together, as if suppressing a curse. Lacey squeaked. She couldn't help it. It was that much of a jolt to hear Chase's husky southern drawl coming from this paragon of masculinity. She knew boys matured later than girls, but he hadn't just improved with age. He'd transformed. It was like watching Clark Kent step out of a phone booth in a cape and tights.
"Chase," she said. Hi.
"What the hell are you doing in Wyoming?" he asked. It was a question that should have been accompanied by a smile, or at least a curious tilt of the head. Instead, Chase scowled when he said it. Scowls always made Lacey babble. She could feel the urge coming on and was helpless to stop it.
I need help. Things went, well, wrong in Conway. Very wrong."
"Join the crowd," Chase said dryly.
"I got a divorce," Lacey continued. The words were spilling out, and she had the sudden sensation of tumbling down a steep hill, limbs flailing, completely out of control. "Trent was..." She sucked in a deep breath. Trent had told her not to tell anyone anything, but it was all going to come out eventually anyway. Besides, Trent wasn't the boss of her. Not anymore. "He was a liar and a cheat. I couldn't stay married to him once I knew what he'd done. And now everybody hates me, and nobody can find him, and they're after me."
"They?"
"My ex-husband's business associates."
"What, you've got a bunch of vicious real estate agents on your tail?"
Chase's lip quirked up on one side, in the first indication Lacey had seen that he might have a sense of humor.
"No, I've got Wade Simpson on my tail."
That got his attention.
"Wade Simpson, the guy who..."
"The guy who cornered me at that party and practically raped me. The guy you rescued me from."
"I always figured Wade would be in jail by now."
He turned his attention to a sheaf of papers on the counter, picking them up and straightening the edges. "He's a cop. she said. Chase looked surprised, and she couldn't blame him. Wade Simpson had been Conway High's resident juvenile delinquent. His beleaguered parents had been as surprised as anyone when he'd channeled his penchant for violence and bullying into a stint at the police academy and a job patrolling the normally placid streets of Conway. And she'd been surprised when she discovered Trent was doing business with the guy. She wasn't sure how a small-town cop had amassed enough money to invest in real estate, but Wade had evidently become a player. "Or at least he's a cop now, but he won't be once Trent testifies," she said. "He was one of Trent's investors, and I guess he was kind of an enforcer, threatening people. He's good at that kind of thing." She looked down at the floor, tracing the edge of a linoleum tile with the toe of her shoe. "You saved me from him once."
"That was a long time ago."
"It was.
I was a different person then."
She scanned him from his broad shoulders down to the big square belt buckle that guarded his fly.
"Yeah, you sure were."
Had she just licked her lips? She couldn't believe she'd licked her lips. She was normally more dignified than that, more subtle. But the blatant come-on didn't seem to have any effect. He was still eyeing her with undisguised disdain.
"So you've been living on dirty money all this time?"
She set her fists on her hips and glared at him. In response, he gave her another once-over, and this time it was downright insulting. When had that sweet boy who'd followed her around like a lost puppy all through school become this bitter, caustic man? "I've been trying to find a job. Nobody would hire me. Besides, I didn't know Trent was a crook."
"You should have."
He was right. Lacey sucked in a deep breath and blew it out, wishing her guilt would go with it. She wasn't responsible for what her husband had done. She hadn't had any idea how he managed to buy so much land cheap from the government. But it was hard to admit that she hadn't known she was living on ill-gotten gains for the past 8 years. She might not be evil like Trent, but she'd been stupid. Stupid and naive. It was complicated. Trent was bribing people, getting them to condemn land so he could buy it cheap. There's a law in Tennessee. It's called eminent domain, where the state can take people's land if they want to build a highway or something.
"I know."
She resisted the urge to scowl back at Chase. He wasn't just mean and sarcastic. He was a know-it-all, too. But then the highway project would get canceled, and Trent would buy the land cheap from the state, and... Chase's brown, golden retriever eyes looked more like a Rottweiler's now. A mean Rottweiler. She half expected a growl to rise from his throat. This was not going well. "He was a crook," she admitted.
"I know," Chase said again. "So that makes you Mrs. Crook, right?"
"Not anymore." She splayed her hands. "Look, I made a mistake. I never loved him. He wasn't what I thought he was."
"I could have told you that."
"Well, you should have."
"How could I? You kept the whole thing a secret."
He was right. Her relationship with Trent had been hushed up practically until the day they married. She'd been 17 when she'd started working weekends in his office, and the 12-year age difference between them had been more than a challenge. It had been a legal obstacle. Trent could have gone to jail for their relationship. The day they could go public as a couple was only a week before her wedding, her 18th birthday. "Look, I'm married way too young, and I married the wrong guy. He told me he'd do anything for me. Told me I could go to school, get my real estate license, study marketing, everything I wanted. And then he turned out to be a liar and a crook." She looked down at her hands twisting in front of her and remembered how the realization had crept up on her,
darkening her future like vines covering a bright window. But lots of girls make bad decisions. It's not like I did drugs or anything.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?